NCAA tournament. And I don't know how your bracket looks, but my bracket.
Pretty messy for me. It's
very messy for me, especially on the left side of my bracket where I only had one team advancing to the Sweet 16 on that side. I got six on the other side, so I ended up with seven, which is not totally terrible. And I still got three out of my final four. And I got my two finalists and my champion and three out of my final four. So that part,
well, then
the
you're
final
doing,
four.
Then you're doing really well, because I got to tell you, Craig, I talked about this on my show Saturday. After the first round, okay, there's 32 games in the first round. I got 25 of them correct. That's not bad. You'd like to do better. I'm sure I've done worse.
That's what I did in the first round. Yeah,
okay,
25.
So 25.
Right. Yeah.
That's not bad. And so that means I lost seven games in the first round. And out of those seven, five of those games I got wrong. I did not have the team that I missed advancing to another round, so it wasn't going to be like a huge penalty in five of those seven games, okay?
Not bad.
Unfortunately, two of those losses were in my final four. Purdue and my national champion, Arizona. We talked about that on Friday. And then, on Friday morning, and then over the weekend I lost Kansas, who was my other participant in the national title game. So I think, Craig, I got eight of the 16. But you've still got three of your final four, and I only have one, and I am put in the position, Craig, the incredibly unenviable, whatever that word is, of rooting for the Texas Longhorns. If Texas gets and trust me, look, I'm not rooting for Texas, okay? Especially because hopefully they're going to meet up with Houston, and I'll be rooting for the Cougars like mad for obvious reasons. But Texas is my last hope to have a Final Four team, Craig.
I will be too, and I picked Texas in my Final Four, and you know how much I love Kelvin Sampson.
I'm right there
Houston,
with you.
But me too. But with the injury to Sasser coming into the tournament, we just didn't know, and so.
Well, Shedd's kind of banged up too. In addition to Sasser, but you're right. Yeah, Sasser is the one we're all watching.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Yeah, Shedd with the knee injury and so forth. Kelvin talked about it after the first game. That was impressive what they did to Auburn, Matt, down by 10 at halftime, basically playing a road game in Birmingham.
Right.
And they just come out and just totally dominate that second half. That was the second half that Houston played against Auburn is as good as anyone's played in this term. What, they outscored them, 50-23 in the second half? I mean, just totally demolished them.
It was incredible. You hope that they haven't peaked, because you're right. That second half was sensational basketball they played, no doubt about it.
And Sasser was in foul trouble, but he still managed to score 22 points in 31 minutes. Shedd only had 10 points, but he played 34 minutes. Tre'Mon Mark was the guy on Saturday night with 26 points. So he joined Sasser as the first duo in Houston history to score 20 or more points in the NCAA tournament since 1984, Matt.
Wow.
Houston has not had a duo that scored, you know, each scored at least 20 points in the NCAA tournament.
That team in 84 was pretty good. I'll say that. He's in some pretty good company.
Well, it just shows what Kelvin has done with that program. And so now they got a matchup on Friday night, CBS game against Miami on a Friday night in the Sweet 16. You talked about Texas and you know, I had Texas going all the way to the final game on my bracket, you know, losing to Alabama in the final game. But Texas, as a number two seed, I thought coming into the tournament, Matt, and I had UCLA going to the Final Four as a two seed, and they're still hanging in there. The other two seeds were Marquette and Arizona. So I thought Texas, I mean, I thought they were the best number two seed coming into the tournament.
Right.
And with Houston's injury problem.
We're playing great.
They
had just beaten Kansas twice in, seven days?
Twice in 8 days.
Yeah.
And beat them by 16 and 20. Didn't
slaughtered
just beat them.
Yes.
I mean, they just run ruled
them
twice. The question on Texas was, I mean, Chris Beard fired in January, Rodney Terry, and you're wondering, is that gonna hurt him at some point? I thought maybe at one point the other night, I thought, well, is this gonna cost Rodney Terry the job if they lose this one to Penn State? But they didn't. They went at 71-66. So Rodney Terry, Matt, Has he earned that Texas job yet? He got him to the Sweet 16. Does he need to get him to the Elite Eight or the Final Four? You know, what does he have to do to keep that job? But their run to the Sweet 16, Matt, this is the first time Texas has been to the Sweet 16 since 2008.
Yeah, no, you're
2008,
right.
2008,
yeah.
That's quite a while.
It is, with all the talent they've had down there. It's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, but before the season, they were viewed as a Final Four team.
Right.
Right? With Chris Beard and well, now they're starting to look like that again to me. I mean, Timmy Allen, he does a great job on the defensive end. Dylan Dessou, 28 points and 10 rebounds the other day. He carries them. Well, so over the last month, Texas is 8-2. With the two wins over Kansas that we talked about. And so they're going to have a chance to get to the Final Four for the first time in 20 years. They play Xavier on Friday night. So Texas is a heck of a story. We've talked about Houston. We've talked about Texas. Alabama, Matt, I picked them to win it all. And right now, if I'm picking it right now, Sweet 16, a lot of, you know, they have these Sweet 16 brackets. I think Alabama has got to be your favorite right now. I mean, you only got two one seeds left. I said from the start of the season, Matt, we talked about it. I've been very consistent. Kansas just did not seem like Kansas to me, you know,
sure,
as
you
far
bet.
As
right.
having the inside presence. Now, did they impress me? And did Bill Self always impresses me, Matt? And I think that's one thing that they missed this last weekend was not having Bill Self on the bench. But my point was, they just this team. I know defending national champion have Bill Self that came on strong in the Big 12 and so forth. But still, those when I came down to fill out a bracket and I got those two Texas games in my mind with losing by 16 and losing by 20, and now you don't have Bill Self, and I thought they might have him by the at least the second game of the tournament, and turns out they didn't. And I do think that was a factor, but I give Arkansas all the credit in the world. But I'm just saying, when the bracket came out, remember I said I think you could have six teams win that region. I mean, you could have Kansas, you could have definitely Arkansas could win it, definitely UConn. A lot of people thought picking UConn to win it. I even said a TCU, dark horse number six seed TCU, and they led Gonzaga for most of the game and were right there at the end. I mean, they lost it, and give Gonzaga all the credit, but TCU as a six seed proved that they were just basically about even with a three seed Gonzaga. But could Gonzaga, could they win it? Well, of course, Gonzaga. Obviously, they do it every year. What? They're back in the Sweet 16 for the eighth year in a row, Matt. Eight straight years to the Sweet 16?
That's something else.
That's a pretty good record of consistency right there. And then UCLA, which is the team that I did pick to win it, but they're fighting through injury problems. So we said that bracket to me was the most wide-open bracket. And so I didn't have Kansas. I did have them beating Arkansas, but then I had UConn taking them out in the next game. But Arkansas got them the other night. And I tell you what, that was a pretty impressive showing by Pat's Arkansas team, huh?
Well, I mean, we've talked about it all year long, and I think it's fair to say they've had a little bit of a disappointing year. I mean, not that I expected them to go undefeated or anything, but when you look at, you know, they've got two players that, at least according to one mock draft, it's just a mock draft. You don't make too much out of it. But the point is, they've got a couple of guys that are showing up in the top 10 and in some places in the top 5 of a lot of these mock drafts. You know, losing the one kid this year.
Nick Smith, yeah.
Yeah, Nick Smith. And with
Ricky Council.
Council's really good.
Devontae Davis. I mean, Davis the other night just took over that game. 9-for-15, 6-for-7 from the foul line, 25 points. He also had 8 rebounds. That's the thing about that game, Matt, is they beat Kansas with Nick Smith not scoring a point.
It's amazing.
Only played 16 minutes and missed all 4 of his shots. And Anthony Black, their guard goes 1-for-6. And missed both of his 3, so he scored 4 points, all right? So Nick Smith goes scoreless, and Black scores 4 points. If you told me that before the game, I'm picking Kansas to win that game.
Well, yeah, and those are the two guys that I'm referencing, Smith and Black, that, again, according, this is just one mock draft. It's NBADraft.net, but NBADraft.net has them 4th and 5th in the upcoming mock draft. I mean, that's two players could go top five in this year's draft on one team. So
and they did nothing the other night.
Right, and they beat Kansas, the one seed, yeah, without doing much of anything. And then Council, I think, is projected to be in the second round. But, no, hey, listen, Arkansas is a team to pay attention to. I mean, hey, we've talked about it all year long.
Arkansas has eliminated a number one seed in the tournament for the second straight year.
Yeah.
They took out Gonzaga last year.
Yep.
All right. Musselman, you can say whatever you want to about the guy, but...
Well, I'll say I'd prefer him to keep a shirt on if he doesn't mind. But he's
jumping
up
on the table with his shirt off and so forth.
Is he excited or
but,
what?
But since the NCAA expanded the tournament field in 1985, Matt, only three times have multiple number one seeds failed to reach the Sweet 16, all right, before this year. It happened in 2000. It happened in 2004. Now in 2018, we're not talking about number one seeds not reaching the final. We're talking about number one seeds not even reaching the Sweet 16, not getting out of the opening weekend. And here it happens, you know, again with Duke and Kansas going
well,
out
about,
this weekend.
How about to augment that? This is from David Hale of ESPN. This is just the fourth time since the Sweet 16 came into existence, okay? Since the Sweet 16 came into play till the tournament since the tournament expanded that much, this is only the fourth time that Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, and North Carolina will not be in the Sweet 16. None of those four. The other years, 1976, 1979, and then 2 years ago, 2021. Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, and North Carolina all not in the Sweet 16. Only the fourth time since the tournament expanded that far.
And we'll get to K-State and them taking out Kentucky. But Arkansas, no, listen. Arkansas out-rebounds Kansas 36-29. They outscored them on second-chance points. And this is the big one, Matt, to me. Second chance points, 15-2, Arkansas.
That's the game.
15-2.
Well,
yeah.
And
job they did on Grady Dick too. They locked down on him. He only got three-point shots off. He went 1-for-3 from three. Had 7 points.
We'll hear the highlight a little bit later on in the show, but maybe the biggest bucket of the game was the rebound and the layup by the Johnson kid that gave Arkansas the lead at 67-65, second chance
point. Yeah, Kamani Johnson.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have much.
He had six offensive rebounds out of his 10 rebounds. He only had 4 points, but like you said, that was
two
a big
of the biggest
one,
ones, though. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's a great point. Musselman said, I'm talking about Grady Dick, he said, we just wanted to give no airspace, you know, to number four. Talking about Grady Dick. He said he's an incredible shooter, one of the best shooters in college basketball. We didn't want to give Grady, you know, we didn't want to let him see any daylight. We felt if we could hold him to 4 or 5 3 ball attempts, that would play to our advantage. And they held him to 3 attempts from 3-point range. That is some great defense.
Well, here's the thing. That augments what you're saying about KU. We know Wilson's a fantastic player, but a lot of years Kansas has more than just one or two guys that you really feel like can go get a bucket for you. And yeah, I mean that speaks to what you were talking about Kansas earlier on, you know, in the year.
But you know what let them down though was their rebounding and their defense. This was Self's teams always get after you defensively.
You bet.
But I'm just saying offensively, like in this game. Now, Arkansas only went 3-for-15, but I'm just saying shooting-wise, Kansas made 5 threes, 5-for-13. That's 38.5%. They didn't attempt that many, but they shot the three better than Arkansas did. Arkansas went 3-for-15. But Kansas shot it all right, 48% in this game. Arkansas only shot 41.4%. So how did they win? It's like we said. They out-rebounded them 36-29, and on the offensive glass, they out-rebounded them 15-7. So all those second-chance points, that was the ball game right there. Like you said, Wilson scored 20 points on 9 shots. He got to the line, was 9-for-11 at the line, but he ended up only 5-for-9 from the field. So he was efficient. DeJuan Harris was efficient. He got hurt at one point in the game, but Harris... he had 12 points, 5 assists. McCullough has been battling injury with the back and so forth. He had 13 points, 5 rebounds, a couple of blocks. I mean, you know, he was okay. KJ Adams really had one of his better games, Matt, 14 points. I just, what I'm saying, it's not that he's a bad player. He's just a little light and a little shorter than what we've seen from Kansas inside in the past. Uday, they only played him 6 minutes in the game, you know, so they really didn't get much. I mean, they only got 5 points off their bench. Yesfu, you know, made that one long three. But anyway, Matt, this is a good Kansas team, and it might Bill Self had made just enough. I mean, they lose the game by 1 point. Could Bill Self have made a difference? Sure, he could have. So I'm not saying Kansas was terrible. They just never had the look of that Final Four team to me. And they ran in to an Arkansas team that really, even though their two draft choices, whatever, didn't play well, Devontae Davis and Ricky Council more than made up for it, because those two guys had a combined 46 points in that game. And so we'll let Pat talk more about Arkansas later. But I thought that was maybe the game of the weekend, Matt, I know there were upsets, bigger upsets of the weekend
forth. Right.
But as far as a game that we look forward to that really lived up to the billing, I mean, I thought that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, I definitely thought and said so, that it was the game of the day for me going into Saturday. And part of that is because Kansas and Arkansas are close to us, and so we pay a little bit of, you know, more attention to them. But still, you know, for a 1-8 or 1-9 game, whatever it was, it wasn't a very big spread. So, yeah, that was...
Yeah, Arkansas 8 seed.
8 seed, yeah. So for going into the game, yes. I going into the day, I thought it was the game of the day, and it totally lived up to the billing to me.
Anyway, and we didn't really even get to Alabama, but Alabama was very impressive. Anyway, the point is we got two number one seeds left with Alabama and Houston. Got UCLA looking good as a number two seed. Got Texas looking really good as a number two seed. Got the UConn Huskies looking really good. We'll talk about UConn and what they did. But that's going to be a heck of a game, right, Matt, with UConn taking on Arkansas?
You bet.
And,
I can't wait
for it. And then Tennessee. Tennessee taking out Duke. And we got to brag on Tennessee. Rick Burns, I mean, he said he felt that they were getting disrespected, and they played like it. I mean, they just took
– They took the fight to Duke. Yeah, they really did.
They took the fight to him with toughness. We'll talk about that. But they did. You got to give Tennessee all the credit in the world. And then Gonzaga, like we said, well, they're just back in the Sweet 16 the eighth year in a row.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that something?
And then K-State, and K-State just started dropping those bombs at the end of the game.
Yep.
Those three huge threes. K-State was fun to watch. They really were. That K-State-Kentucky game was another highlight of the week.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
The Call of the Game, sponsored by Hook and Reel, Cajun Seafood and Bar. You need to go to the Hook and Reel, located at 6320 Southwest 3rd, right off I-40 and MacArthur.
Suns defense has been really vulnerable in their last four games. They've lost three of them. Shea, slashing left on Craig. Straightens up on the left wing, elevates and fires, fade away, 18-foot jumper on the way, singes the strings, Thunder 117, the Suns 109. Shea rising to the moment, has 36 points on the afternoon.
And that is the great Matt Pinto on the call on the Thunder Radio Network. And the Sports Animal, of course, the flagship station of that Thunder Radio Network. Anyway, it's a great day in OKC yesterday afternoon as the Thunder take down the Phoenix Suns, 124-120. And, Matt, there were MVP chants at the Paycom Center yesterday. And this guy is playing like an MVP. SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, goes for 40. 40 points on 24 shots. Gets to the line 19 times. Ho-hum, 16 out of 19 at the line. Didn't even take a three-pointer. And he scores 40. And as the Thunder beat the Phoenix Suns as they outscore them by 10 points in the fourth quarter, win the game by 4 points, 124-120. Thunder moving within one game of 500, 35-36. Now through 71 games, 11 games to go in this season, as they take out a Phoenix team that got 46 from Devin Booker. Devin Booker was just amazing, as always, for the Phoenix Suns. But the Phoenix Suns started, who did they start at center, Matt? Bismack Biyombo.
Al's guy.
Al's guy started at center for the Suns because not only did they not have Kevin Durant, they also didn't have DeAndre Ayton yesterday. So let's say we always got to be, you know, in the of transparency here, Matt.
That's right.
We got to point out that Kevin Durant and DeAndre Ayton did not play in this game for the Phoenix
Which
Suns.
Might explain how the Thunder did so well on the boards, because normally they do not do that well. They're not a good rebounding team, but yesterday was not the case.
That's right. 44-40 on the boards. The Thunder won that battle. But the Thunder shot 50% yesterday from the field. They made 11 threes, 39% from three. That'll work. Lou Dort with four of them. Lou Dort really came on knocking down the threes in the second half. He ended up with 20 points. Josh Giddey had 16, 6 and 6. So another nice game from him. Really, you know, J-Dub did not have a great game, Matt. Only 5 points on one out of six shooting, missed both of his threes. Santa Clara Williams, if you want to call him that. But he only scored 5 points yesterday, but he still had 10 rebounds, 5 assists, did a lot of good things. Isaiah Joe was making shots off the bench, as he always does. 15 points off the bench. He knocked down 3 threes off the bench, 6 out of 10 shooting for Isaiah Joe. But just a nice victory yesterday for the Thunder. Much needed win, and now they hit the road. But the Thunder have won 4 out of 5, as they've missed the playoffs the last 2 years. But postseason is definitely within reach for the Thunder, Matt.
Well, that's one thing I was going to say. A couple things, Craig. Number one, and this is not anything new. If you've been paying attention this year, you kind of know this already. But you know what stood out to me yesterday, Craig? This is big picture. This is not X's and O's or anything. It's getting fun again. You know, it's getting fun. And look, this team is not ready to compete for a championship. I'm not saying that. They've still got work to do just to get into the play-in tournament, even though I think they're in the 8th spot now in that big jumbled mess. But anyway, they still have work to do to get in the postseason. There's no guarantee of that. I'm just saying it's starting to get fun again. You know, and that's what I think a lot of us who care about this team and frankly, the city, and I don't want to get too big picture on this thing, but I think that's what a lot of us have been waiting for. You know, the last couple of years have just been dreadful. Kind of get the deal, but at the same time, we've kind of been waiting for this. I have a buddy who is at every game, and let's just say this buddy has a pretty good view of the action. We'll leave it at that. He told me yesterday, Craig, that was the loudest the arena has been since the pandemic. Shut everything down. And so anyway, and I just thought it was interesting. Just, you know, it's a Sunday afternoon game, you know. I mean, you know, maybe people aren't as liquefied or whatever as they normally would be. And I told my buddy, I said, well, just imagine if Durant had been out there. Imagine what the venom coming out of the fans would have been. But I'm just, again, this is big picture, and we've got a lot, you know, more X's and O's we can break down. It's just cool to see this team, you know, relevant again. And to that end, I also wanted to bring this up. I don't know if you saw it, Craig. Normally you do. Zach Lowe of ESPN.com, I think it's every Friday he comes out with Lowe's 10 things. And if you're an NBA fan, you have to check this out on ESPN.com every Friday. And one of his 10 things this week, two or three days ago, was about SGA. And talking about, you know, it's not just his offense. He is becoming a guy that is contributing, maybe I probably could say it better than that, on the defensive end of the floor. And he, like, for example, okay, now this is a little statty, but hang with me on this, okay? This is from Zach Lowe. There's 5 rotation players that are averaging at least 1 block and 1 steal this season, okay? 4 of them are big men, guys you've probably heard of. Joel Embiid, MVP candidate, Jaren Jackson, Jakob Poeltl, and Anthony Davis. The other one, SGA. He is one of five that are averaging at least one block and one steal. Now, that may not sound like a lot. Well, what do you mean, one block and one steal? What's a big deal? Well, if it's not that big of a deal, then how come more people aren't doing it?
That's so, right. No, that's anyway. Right. And that's his and that's his advantage is his length on defense.
Correct.
So it's not surprising. I mean, he does block shots, and he does. His instincts are good on gaining steals. Now, what he needs to do a better job of is staying in front of his man and not being overpowered
right.
and taking, you know.
Well, and that's why I say contribute on defense. Yeah. He can improve right. his on-ball defense. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And I think he'd probably be the first one to admit that. But I'm just saying he's
contributing. The block and steals that cannot be ignored. I mean, because he definitely does contribute, and that's what Zach Lowe was saying. And he contributed 40 points yesterday, and he always contributes at the foul line, 16 out of 19. He just has the knack for being able to get his shot off in a variety of different ways.
Yeah.
He is so fun to watch. And back to your point on the fans, Matt, it's interesting that Dagnall was saying the fans, they're going to need more from the fans here coming down the stretch. I mean, once they're getting ready to go to the West Coast, but, I mean, once they come home, they don't have that many home games, but they do need the – Matt, when have we heard that over the last two and a half seasons?
Well,
we need
haven't.
More from the fans
no,
because, I mean, when they were in take mode, they didn't care what they got from the fans.
No.
Now that's a little indication that they're trying to win these games
going
to need a little more from the fans. When have we heard that in recent years?
It's been since they've been serious about winning games three or 4 years ago. Lou Dort on the offensive end was tremendous, like you brought up. You'll take that from Lou Dort any day of the week. 7 of 11, 4 of 6 for 20 points. Thought Giddey was all right, 7 of 13, hit one of his two threes. Turned it over a little bit, but I thought
16,
he played pretty well.
16, 6 and 6, four turnovers, fine. I mean, that's
– And look, we like you brought up, Craig, we know Durant and Ayton weren't out there, okay? But the Thunder were able to win a game without their second-best player doing a whole lot. Now, he did have 10 rebounds.
And they were down 15. Here's the deal.
Right.
I mean, they're down 15 points. The first half was pretty ugly, all right? But it's another one of those games, Matt, where you mentioned it, SGA, he steals the ball, right? In the closing seconds, of the third quarter, I'm talking about this time, scores a layup, fouled, 0.4 of a second to go, makes the foul shot, cuts the Phoenix lead down to 6 at the end of the quarter. That's a big difference. I mean, if Phoenix, has the ball up by 9, if they go score, they could be up by 11 or 12. Well, then, I mean, he turns it into a steal, 3-point play. Now the Thunder have momentum, and Monty Williams talked about it after the game. Monty Williams says that tough turnover at the end of the third, he goes, it turned into an and one, and the momentum shifted. So that was a tough exchange, all right? That was a big deal. Anyway, Phoenix, they had led by 15, like I said, but they were up by 10, 190. Thunder going an 18-2 run. 18-2 run. And I heard the Morning Animals talking about this, and we got to mention him. Aaron Wiggins, Matt, his defense in the fourth quarter. And he played about the whole fourth quarter, 7 points. Plus 8 on the stat sheet and so forth.
Yeah, right.
His contribution cannot be ignored in this game.
And if you're
his
going
defense
to,
helped turn that game around.
And if you're going to do anything in the playoffs, if you're going to make any noise in the playoffs, you have to have some role guys like that.
Yeah.
Look, Wiggins is probably not, certainly not on the offensive end. Maybe he could on the defensive end, but you're not going to get something like that from Wiggins every night. And frankly, you're not going to get offensively what you got from Lou Dort last night. But you will see Jalen Williams from Santa Clara play better than that. So you have to have those role players over the course of a 5-6-7 game series make contributions like that if you're going to make any noise in the postseason. And I know in the NBA it's star driven. The bottom line is, guys like Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and Giannis, and all those guys. I mean, that I know that they run the show, but Craig, far better than me. You have to have. I remember in the run when. 2 years ago when the Suns were on their run to the finals. I mean, there was guys like, Campaign that were having incredible games in those Western Conference finals. So you have to have something like that if you're going to make any noise.
No question about it. Okay, some other NBA notes while we're at it here. The Denver Nuggets, they got a much-needed win yesterday. Jokic had a triple-double. He's battling for the MVP. 22 points, 17 rebounds, 10 assists for Jokic. Very efficient triple-double. Murray had 25. Michael Porter had 28, knocked down 5 out of 9 threes in that game. As they win on the road in Brooklyn. So that was a that was a big win for Denver yesterday. Philadelphia, the Sixers win their eighth straight game, Matt. They just scored 141 on Saturday. This is on Saturday against the Indiana Pacers. But Embiid went for 31, 7 and 7, 10 out of 13 from the line. Tyrese Maxey also had 31 for the Sixers in that one, as they shot over 61% in that one. Another notable game from the weekend, Saturday night. Memphis, all right, hands Golden State their 11th straight road loss, 133-119.
It's not a rivalry, though. Don't call it a rivalry.
Not a rivalry. Not a rivalry at all, but Dylan Brooks knocked down four for four from three.
Don't tell Dylan Brooks that.
And had 18 points in the game. I think he was a little fired up. But Desmond Bane, man. I mean, Desmond Bane, 26, 10 out of 17 shooting, as they're still playing without Ja Morant, and they hand Golden State their 11th straight road loss.
Did you see Klay Thompson, what he did, reacting to Dylan Brooks?
About the rings?
Yeah, about the rings. One, imagine you've got a fist, and then you hold up one finger, two fingers, three fingers, four fingers. I loved it. I loved it. Yeah, it's not a rivalry, of course. But
no. But Klay needed to do some shooting with those fingers.
Yeah,
he was only 2 for 9 from three in that game.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Okay. And then also Saturday, the Boston Celtics, they lose in Utah, Matt. The Celtics lost in Utah as the Jazz erase a 19-point deficit. They dropped the Celtics down to third place on Saturday night. Denver also had played Saturday in the first of their back-to-back. They lost in New York to the Knicks. So they came back, beat Brooklyn that we talked about. Jokic had 24, 10, and 8 in that loss to the Knicks, but the Knicks had beaten Denver the night before. Russell Westbrook had a tough night on Saturday night when they lost to Orlando, and he said he needed to bounce back. He did bounce back, and they bounced back and win in Portland last night. So the Clippers split two games, and Kawhi didn't play in the game that they lost to Orlando. Kawhi Leonard didn't play in that one, and Anthony Davis took the blame. When they lost to the Mavs, heck of a game on Friday. Yeah, that was Friday night. 111-110. Dallas won that one. Again, playing without Luka, but Kyrie just went nuts. 38 points, 5 out of 9 from 3. And even though Davis had 26 and 10, he took the blame on that one, as Maxi Kleber got off the game-winning 3 with 0.2 seconds left on the clock for the Lakers. And then we got to mention the Grizzlies on Friday night. Largest comeback in the NBA this season. The Grizz rallied from 29 down in the third quarter against the San Antonio Spurs, Matt. And they win it in overtime. 126-120 in overtime. They were down 9 in the final minute of regulation. Outscored San Antonio 9-0 to send it in overtime. Desmond Bane had 21 in that one, 8 in overtime. Tyus Jones had his first career triple-double with 20 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists for the Grizz. So that was a crazy one on Friday night. So just a crazy weekend in the NBA.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
It's the Bob Moore Ford Drive of the Game, sponsored by Bob Moore Ford. Football is back, which means tailgate parties, which means trucks with tailgates, which means savings on all Ford F-150s at Bob Moore. Visit BobMooreFord.com.
We're down to 8 seconds left. Trying to get it out of his hand. They blitz him. Noel squeezes through the
ball. Oh, no!
Oh, that was special. Drive of the game, Marquise Noel dishing off to Tomlin for the slam as K-State takes out the Kentucky Wildcats 75-69 yesterday. And the story of this game was Marquise Noel. I've talked about him all season long, Matt. He's my favorite player to watch, definitely in the Big 12. One of my favorites in college basketball.
Well, he's got a flair for the dramatic, man. That guy can make
some
plays.
He does. And I know that sometimes he can shoot you out of games. He'll
That's
take
right.
long
yep.
threes. Sometimes he'll take some bad shots. But yesterday in Greensboro, North Carolina, as they take out Kentucky, He scored 23 out of his 27 after halftime. All right. K-State had a terrible start to this game shooting the ball, Matt. A lot like Iowa State. We went and talked about Iowa State the other day when they were like, what, 1-for-17 from three at one point. Anyway, K-State yesterday, they missed their first 13 threes. First 13. They were 2-for-17 for the game when all of a sudden, here, Noel, step back three. All right, against Case and Wallace. So K-State's within one. Well, then Massoud, he pulled up from like downtown, from like 30 or so. That one, I mean, it just took the breath of the whole arena is going, whoa, you know. And Massoud knocks it down at the 221 mark. That gave K-State the lead for good at 64-62. And then Keontae Johnson, the Florida transfer, Matt, and he's on the right side, right wing, you know, dribbling inside the three-point line, little step back three right in front of the K-State bench, and all of a sudden the lead is 67-62 with 1:23 to go, and K-State was going to win. This was a close second half. Nearly the whole second half played within 4 points. Neither team had a lead of 5 points until K-State finally led by five with 1:23 to go. But the story, Matt, is Marquise Noel, only 5'8", all right? Third team, AP All-American, makes 7 out of 14, 10 out of 11 from the line, also hit three threes, all right? The first one over Sway after that 0-for-13 start for K-State that I talked about, you know. Another one after a halftime when he's on the March Madness logo near midcourt with his left foot on that. He will launch from anywhere. Massoud launches, but those three threes, the one from Noel, the one from Massoud, and then Keontae Johnson, boom, 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 and all of a sudden K-State had control of that game, Matt.
So you're telling me the Wildcats are still playing and the Jayhawks aren't, huh? That ought to make some That ought to make some folks raise an eyebrow up there. No, I listen. It's all
Jerome
playing matchups.
The job he's done there, Matt, to Sweet 16 for the first time since 2018, and they're going to play Tom Izzo and Michigan State.
Yeah, and look, hey, Tom Izzo and his teams, we know what they're all about. They have a lot of this is their time of year, but there's no reason Kansas State can't go and win that game. I saw Dick Vitale over the weekend said that Shaka Smart was his National Coach of the Year, and I can't argue with that like I have any business arguing with Dick Vitale over college basketball anyway. But, man, Jerome Tang, what can you say about the job that he's done? And yeah,
came
they had
from
to get
Baylor.
Coming from Baylor, and, yeah, they had to go into the transfer portal, but guess what? That's life in college athletics nowadays. He didn't make the rules.
Well, that's what you got to do. I give it up to him.
Correct. I mean, that's right.
Keontae Johnson from Florida, of course, Noel, was there. But
right.
Noel, what he is doing in that pick and roll, all right?
Oh, yeah.
And he's shooting 43% from three, you know, in the tournament. But what they did, you know, on the defensive end, Montana State and Kentucky, mm-hmm. all right, committed turnovers on 23% of their possessions against K-State. So, anyway, they're playing well. All right, real quick, I want to mention before the end of this hour, and we talked about a little bit at the top, we'll save the baseball. I mean, there's so much going on. Save that. The USA just put it on Cuba 14-2 yesterday in the semifinals, so they move into the World Baseball Classic Finals. But Taylor Moore, Matt, we got to give it up to our man from Edmond North. It looked like a two-man battle with Jordan Spieth and Adam Shank, and then all of a sudden, boom, here's Taylor Moore. And he hits a 9-iron within 5 feet for birdie on the 15th hole. Then he holds a 25-foot birdie putt on number 16, made two tough pars at 17 and 18, 4-under par, 67, grew up in Edmond, and gets his first PGA Tour victory. So happy. This puts him in the Masters. He's going to be at Augusta National. Taylor Moore. And I tell you, he's been playing some great golf lately, Matt. This might have seemed like maybe to some people like it came out of the blue or whatever. He was just outside the top 100 in the world golf rankings heading into, this past tournament. But this year, Taylor was 11th at Torrey Pines. tough golf course. 15th at Pebble Beach. 14th at Phoenix. 39th at Bay Hill. He was in contention at the Players, fell back with, he had a great third round at the Players, fell back a little bit, fell back to 35th, but he was right in there going into Sunday at the Players Championship. So this win puts him into the Masters, also puts him into the PGA, puts him in pretty good shape for the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. Plus, it gives him his PGA Tour card for the rest of this year and then 2 more years all the way through 24 and through 20. Yeah, you get 2 years plus the year that you're in.
Right.
So, see, through, you know, the rest of 23, then all of 24, all of 25, he's got his PGA Tour card, and it couldn't happen to a better guy.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask, Craig, is what does this win do for him? I mean, aside from winning the golf tournament, we know that's, you know, most important, but that was my question. So he's in the Masters, he is in the PGA, and you said in a good place for the Open?
He's right there because he's right just barely inside the top 50 in the world now. So if he stays, if he maintains that position and so forth, and even playing in the Masters is going to help him and so forth.
Yeah,
so
right.
he's in pretty good shape right now. If he plays decent golf to make the U.S. Open an Open champ, no matter what, he's in the next two majors. The Masters will be his first major ever. And so he's in the Masters, he's in the PGA coming up after that, and a good chance to be in the Open Championship and the U.S. Open.
And he may have earned it anyway, but no matter what, he has his card for the next 2 years after this, is what you're saying.
That's right.
That's fantastic.
Right.
That's great.
And plus he won over $1.4 million.
Oh, not to mention the prize money.
Right.
Well, I mean, in all seriousness, okay? I mean, this would be the case if this was somebody that you didn't know personally or whatever. This is a life-changing day for him yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
No question.
Yeah.
Great, great, great day. But my point is he's been playing great golf,
right.
You know, building up to this. Like I said, at Torrey Pines, at Pebble, at Phoenix, at Bay Hill. But you could kind of see it coming, you know, that he was sitting there. And they talked about, I mean, afterward, is like a lot of people, like Spieth and Shank, I thought that they thought they were maybe in a two-man match play deal. Tommy Fleetwood was in it a little bit, you know, and so forth. But then Taylor birdies a few holes down the stretch you know, Shank hits it up against a tree at 18, hit a great left-handed shot, but it runs over into the rough on the other side. His wedge shot spins back, and he's got a 40-something foot putt. Really kind of rattled the flag a little bit, almost went in. But he's a great story. It's hard to pull against him because Shank was playing for the 10th straight week, so he can take some time off when his son is born. His wife was out there 8 months pregnant, out there watching him and so forth. And this would have been a life-changing deal for him, too. But and then you had the big name there was Jordan Spieth. But there were also other big names in the mix, like I said, with Tommy Fleetwood, Webb Simpson, Justin Thomas tied for 10th. I mean, Taylor beat a lot of big-name players yesterday at the Valspar. Okay. And then the other, Danny Lee wins a four-man playoff in the LIV. And then Ernie Els got a victory. Bernard Langer was trying to win his record 46 PGA Tour Champions
victory. I was going to say, would that have been like his 97th championship on the Champions Tour?
It would have been
tour?
His 46, and it would have been a record, so it was a big one. And it looked like he was going to win it. But Ernie Els won it. And so that was a big win for Ernie because it was only his third senior victory, second coming in that tournament. And like Ernie said, he said, for a long time in my 40s, I didn't play very well. You know, so it's taken a while to get the confidence back. And Ernie Els, a winner again.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.